Okay.
I just broke it out so that
yeah,
it's
that's
just,
great. Yeah, okay. That's very helpful. Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you.
And then you can just cross them out as we.
That's great.
We have five of these to do together.
Yeah, so. This is good. So we'll be back at what 4:15 or whenever we end.
Correct. Yes. It's yeah. The general rule is 15 minutes after okay. The start or after the end of the general
not
session.
Much to see after
that's right.
Yeah.
And there will be mass. So. Can everyone hear me? Okay, perfect. All right, good afternoon, everyone. We're gonna get started. Thank you for being here today. Welcome to the 2019 fall meeting of the U.S. Bishops. My name is Chieko Noguchi, and I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Joining me today is Bishop Michael Burbidge of the Diocese of Arlington. Bishop Burbidge is the chairman of the USCCB's Committee on Communications, and he'll be introducing our panelists today. Thank you, Your Excellency, for your work in leading the committee. I'd like to hand it over to you to introduce our panelists.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's on, I think.
Thank you, Chieko. Welcome to you also.
Thank you.
Your first conference. Of course, you all know His Eminence Cardinal DiNardo, our president, United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, who this morning delivered his final address to his brother bishops as president of the conference. And we were grateful for his words that he offered to us, and I'm sure you observed a thunderous applause from his brother bishops, thanking him for his leadership these past 3 years. And we also have with us today Bishop Robert Reed, the Auxiliary Bishop of Boston, president of Catholic Television Network. Bishop Reed is also a member of the Committee on Communications and has just returned. He's one of the bishops who has just returned from the Limina visit. So we thought it would be a good opportunity to have someone, a bishop, who has just recently had that experience to be with us today. So we thank you, all the members of the media, for your presence, for being with us, and we now open the floor for your questions.
Thank you, Your Excellency. We'll go ahead and open the floor to questions from members of the media. If you have a question, I would ask that you raise your hand or signal to me, and please note your name and your news organization along with your question. For the benefit of those who are joining us over our live stream broadcast, I would ask that you wait until someone from our staff can bring one of the mics over to you before you begin speaking. Michael Laughlin.
Michael O'Loughlin from America Magazine. A question for all three of you. Based on the address from the nuncio, as well as the proposed amendments to the voting guide to the introductory letter, it appears that there's some tension within the conference about how well the conference has been able to adopt Pope Francis's either vision or priorities, and I'm wondering if you can comment on that. Is there still some disagreement about how the Pope's vision has been received by the conference?
I'll start out by simply saying I think that the finessing of these priorities and plans for the future were an indication of how serious we take Pope Francis, that it wasn't a case of any kind of dissent or difficulty. It was just making it more and more clear. I think that was true behind the nuncio. The nuncio said, let's step back, let's take a look at what you do. Are you doing this as justly as you can? Why don't you pinpoint some things that he brought about the environment, for instance? Or I liked it about being a bridge builder. I was thinking it was bridge building and things of clergy. As you know, the Pope has spent, he only wrote a letter to priests. He's very interested that we take care, good care of our priests. So on those matters, I don't see it so much that the bishops are opposed. I mean, it seems that we were together on it, but it's just spelling it out in much more detail. But I'll let others.
Yeah, so I would say, too, that the priorities clearly reflect our embrace of our Holy Father's initiatives, the words that he has addressed to us. I think some practical suggestions were offered also, how these can be made more known in our local churches, our diocese. One practical suggestion, even in our own strategic plans, we embrace the goals and the objectives, but maybe we mention specifically how they have come to us through the Holy Father. So I think the unity was very clear today.
Certainly there's an urgency about many issues in the church and in our life as Catholics at this particular moment. And so that urgency, as it should, creates a dialogue, which is a healthy thing. I experienced that at the Ad Limina last week in speaking with the members of the various dicasteries and also the Holy Father himself. So, you know, that urgency creates a dialogue, which sometimes creates tension, but that's a good and a positive thing, I think, to have that conversation.
Carol Zimmerman.
Hi, this is for Cardinal DiNardo. I'm Carol Zimmerman with Catholic News Service, and I spoke with you 3 years ago when you started your term and you said you were hopeful, and now the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit. Do you still have hope with everything you've been through the past 3 years, and even more so, do you have hope right now?
Obviously, I have hope. I put on a little addition to my talk at the end today using Holy St. Augustine, pray for us. A line of his about we're always beginning, it's the principle of beginning something is the brilliance of the human condition. And I went into this role not knowing what would happen in the 3 years. I mean, I'd be not telling the truth if I told you that it wasn't a rough ride, because it was. But I was always hopeful, and I thought that we managed to do the rough ride, and so I'm leaving the job. Whoever takes over, I think we're leaving it in a bishop of competent hands. All the people I see on the list, and Archbishop Gomez, are fine people. I think the conference can move ahead. So I'm actually positive about it. I did have what made matters a mess is, you know, I had that stroke 6 or 7 months ago, but I'm 85% through that, so I'm doing well. Thank you very much for the question.
J.D. Flynn.
Hi, J.D. Flynn, Catholic News Agency, and Chieko, welcome. It's great to have you here. Eminence, this question is for you too. You guys, the conference has spent down a lot of its cash, and the bishops don't want to give you more cash. So what specifically, I mean, assuming that the absent diocesan bishops don't pull through, what kind of cut specifically does the conference actually have to make? What does it mean not to get this increased tax assessment, concretely and specifically?
I think, of course, they will pull through when we ask those absent bishops who are ordinaries. It's a neuralgic issue, and I can't say as much more because I'm not as on top of this as, let's say, Archbishop Schnur would be. But there's always a case or a question for our finances. I think the budget and finance people go through this with a fine-tooth comb. You'd have to go to the administrative board where they, you know, we first do this, you know, and put it pretty intensely. I think they do a good job, and when they offer this amount of increase after not doing it for this past year, I think there's good reason for it. But you're asking the original, I look at these spreadsheets and somebody explains at least some of the lines to me. I would hedge on that because I'm just not as knowledgeable as I should be. But I think the bishops are a little worried because of the crises they face in their own diocese. And it makes us on our toes. I'll say that much for them. They put us on our toes. We'll have to go back and see what we can do. I don't know if you have anything, Bishop Burbidge.
Yeah, if the assessment is not approved, but hopefully it it's being considered by those bishops who were not present today, then obviously you have to do what any organization would have to do, is look at your priorities and look at individual offices. And without that increase, then we may have to adjust some of those areas. But we're not at that point yet, so.
Father Rees.
Father Tom Rees from Religion News Service. Cardinal DiNardo, at the Synod on the Amazon, there was a sense of crisis in terms of global warming and the environment and the damage to the rainforest, that things have to be done now. Is there that same sense of crisis among the bishops here in terms of global warming and the environment and the need to do something now? And how do you communicate that sense of crisis to the Catholic people?
I think that there is among the bishops a sense of its radically growing importance. If I can say urgency immediately now, I'm not so sure, but there is a growing indication of its importance. In local dioceses, we already have certain efforts underway to practically look at the results of global warming and or climate change. I think within our priorities and plans, that matter is becoming more attentive all the time. So, yes, is it happening? Yes. It may be a little slower than what some of those at the Amazon Synod have, because their urgency is, as a regional synod, it's very intense. But the Amazon, it affects other parts of the world in terms of climate. So my point is that I use the word, it's significant and it's really important. If it's reached the word urgent yet, I would say that's still coming.
Heidi?
Thank you. I'm Heidi Schlum from the National Catholic Reporter. And just to follow up from Michael and maybe Father Rees's question about communion with the Pope, but also about the environment. For example, one way that was mentioned by the nuncio to show a communion with the Pope especially would be the implementation of Laudato Si. So could you speak at all to things that might be going on in your or other diocese to implement that, maybe especially as we approach the fifth anniversary?
Well, we think Laudato Si is important, and the Holy Father is constantly reminding us, and I'm sure during the Ad Limina, he will be doing some more of that. But in my local church, you know, we've reconsidered things relative to how we do construction. Since the year 2006, in my archdiocese, I have dedicated 28 new church buildings, because we're all growth. Now, when we first started them out, we had one way, but over the years, we've been putting in some aspects of creativity, even to the point of how we deal with the ceilings and all, and with the skylights, and what's the thing they put on? We're doing it a lot in Texas. Why can't I think of this? That's my stroke. Of ways of getting heating and all, and we are much more aware now, and I think a lot of dioceses are like that, to tell you the truth, but we are much more aware of these matters, practically speaking, and what we have to do to be responsible agents. So I'll leave it at that. Do you have something?
Okay. Dennis?
Dennis Sadowski, Catholic News Service. Working on the gun issue, Cardinal DiNardo, I understand through the grapevine you really wanted to get something addressed on this agenda. Talk about your concerns that you have and what really prompted you to have the committee put some sort of report together here today.
Well, the concern came to me from others constantly talking about this as a problem. And urban areas of the violence. Houston is an urban area where there's violence, but there are other areas where it's even more serious and significant. May I also add what I made a comment briefly at the end of that discussion? As you know, the international community is really worried about this. And it's one word, look at the banking industry. There's one word that has everybody nervous, terrorism. And that's gun violence. And they use ways to get money. So I think the relationship of financing and the gun violence is pretty important in our culture. I feel bad for young people who are caught in this morass in going to school, where you see this kind of thing happening. It's very distressing. And even in a state like Texas, which is, you know, pretty much pro-gun, the need for education on this is becoming more and more paramount. And Bishop Michael Sis gave a beautiful statement when the terrible stuff happened in his diocese. So, no, it's an important issue and will continue to be important.
I think Archbishop Chaput made a very interesting comment, well taken, about the need for a meeting of minds between those who live in rural areas and those who live in urban areas to perhaps come together and to be educated by the varying opinions and come to a better understanding of some of the common sense need to reform and end gun violence.
Common sense legislation would be so helpful. Yeah, which we always support, and we'll keep supporting that.
Okay, we have time for two more questions. I am calling on Ed.
Ed Condon, Catholic News Agency. Your Eminence, there was a lot of coverage leading up to this session about Bishop Bransfield not being invited, or in fact being sort of disinvited. Is there any consideration in the conference for releasing the names of other bishops who might have been disinvited as a sort of trust-building exercise with the faithful and showing that the protocols adopted in June are working?
I have no answer now. Usually it's the local bishop, the new bishop, who will contact me, write me in that sense. Bishop Bransfield was the first that we had, and I did a consultation of the administrative board, not a vote-taking, but a consultation. It was a good one. And then I'm the one that then would make the decision, and I invited him not to come. That's the way we do it. I don't know of any other right now.
Okay. And the last question goes to Jack.
Hi, Jack Jenkins with Religion News Service. I know that technically the election year has already begun, but we're heading into it in earnest. And there's a conversation right here about a major policy concern with gun violence, and I know that you're also working on documents to talk about other ways, but both your address and another this morning mentioned political polarization as a significant issue affecting the nation and Catholics in the United States. So looking forward into this election year, when we're clearly concerned about political polarization, what do you see as the role of the Bishops Conference in this coming election season, given they played major roles in past elections as well?
I'll do a brief entry and let Bishop Burbidge take it. I mean, the bishops in our magisterium of doctrinal and social teaching, we've always made it a year before an election to put out some kind of a voter helps. That's what we're doing right now. And ours is not to deal with persons and candidates, right? We deal with the issues, and we deal with what is we consider to be moral issues, that all of whom are important, some of whom are more important at a given time than others. And for us, we put them out. There's always going to be something about violence, about immigrants, about pro-life. So that's what we'll do. And I think we'll do the same thing for this election as well. Bishop.
Yeah, and the encouragement, and by leading by example, encouraging our faithful to bring their faith into the public arena, that is a sacred duty, a sacred privilege. So we want to encourage their full participation, and to do so with knowledge, to know the issues, to know the positions of candidates, and that's where we assist them. We never say this is who you vote for, but we say these are the issues. Here, make sure you know how various candidates, how they're speaking about those issues. There's always a consistency with what we're saying, with the sacredness of all human life and the dignity of all persons. And all those issues come under that big umbrella. And we say that not only are you going to be citizens, you have to be faithful citizens, true to what we hold dear, our faith and our belief and morals and values. And also, I think that we can lead by example of fostering true dialogue. That dialogue does allow for people to engage in conversations with these issues, that there'll be debate, there'll be disagreement, but always with respect for one another and to avoid the name calling and the labeling. And so as bishops, we have to lead by example and we have to foster that spirit. Because as you said, we are very much aware of the division and the harsh tones that exist. And so we have to make sure that while this is certainly one of the most important endeavors, initiatives coming up for us as citizens this election year, that we carry it out as faithful citizens and respect for one another.
I'm sorry, what outlet are you with? Can you please identify your outlet?
I'm sorry, I'm with WBAL-TV, the local Baltimore NBC station, Baltimore, the birthplace of American Catholicism. So, but I cover Congress, and I cover this conference when you come here twice a year, and I can't help but notice that both bodies say common sense gun legislation and call for more civility in discourse, in public discourse, especially
You go ahead.
You really can't. We really can't, but we can exhibit it. We can be civil always and respectful in our discourse ourselves as individuals, as a conference. But I don't know if we can dictate that, impress that upon people.
Okay. I used at the end of my speech, God is courteous. Let us be courteous. You can't order that. You can't show it. And in showing it, people might just pick it up. We hope we show it in our own churches and our faith community that it has a way of, I'd like it, if you use this expression, I'd like it to be a good virus. No, be courteous.
All right. Thank you, Your Eminence and Your Excellencies, for your time this afternoon. We'll have another press briefing after the conclusion of the afternoon session.